Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. I hope everyone's keeping warm there, and we're glad you could take some time to tune in today. And a lot of news that affects commercial real estate, or so it would seem. And before we get started talking about some of the current goings-on, I want to remind those that are tuning in for the first time or maybe not regularly, please don't forget that just because you hear a strategy or two kicked about today or a investment opportunity mentioned in a real estate private partnership, don't run out and jump in the pool just yet. Let's have you check with your current advisors, tax, legal, investment, real estate, mentors, etc., etc., and let's make sure that what you heard was indeed correct, and that more importantly, it's a good thing for your facts and circumstances as they might exist today, or maybe a good thing. Nobody knows the future, and boy, is that especially true right now. And you know, I watch the news every day, and it's amazing the twists and turns right now. There's blood running in the streets now, as the old expression goes, and it's hardly getting started, depending on which pundit you listen to. But I was just reading an article today. It was another national, or it was about another national big brand syndicator that let 2,000 units, apartment units, go back to the lender. And that's somebody that knew a lot about what they were doing, but they got caught with some debt in a not desirable structure. It's a structure we've talked about many times over the last couple years about why we were worried about these transactions having the three-year bridge debt, which is a temporary loan that has to be refinanced in 3 years or perhaps five if you can get the 2 1-year extensions that are often provided. The problem is those aren't free. Typically a 1% fee, and that's if the lender's willing to do it. And then there may be guarantees associated with that if you still haven't finished your rehab program, you know, updating the property, getting the net operating income up, etc. So it's one of several factors that are weighing heavy on the minds of lead partners that are in a position where they're going to have to refinance these loans coming up here 2024-2025. In any event, as I was mentioning, please check with your advisors before you take any action on anything you hear here on the show, read on our website, etc. And if you don't have any advisors currently that understand real estate private partnerships combined with real estate taxation and retirement plan planning and zero tax math, those are the four corners that we work at, and we'd be happy to entertain the prospect of working with you. If you would do us a favor and go to the BAPlanner.com website. That's BEAPLANNER.com. And there's a link there, second from the right at the top, to forms. And if you'll go to that page, there will be four steps, four forms. If you'll at least just fill out the first one, that'll give us enough to undertake an introductory call with you, which you can schedule for a time that fits your schedule. There at the far right link, it says call, quite simply, and be happy to spend half an hour or so with you on a phone call after we've reviewed your form submission to try to ascertain whether we can sync up with your goals and objectives. And most people, it seems like, that connect with us are in two camps. One, they're simply interested in investing or continue to invest in real estate private partnership syndications, but they're seeking some independent advice on the math metrics associated with transactions that they're contemplating. We know how to do that, done it for 20 plus years now. And so that's one reason they join us. The other reason, big reason, I guess, is they're behind on the retirement wealth that they need to make it all the way through retirement, especially given the longevity risk and now the tax rate risk that most Americans, at least according to survey after survey after survey, have identified as their two biggest worries going into retirement. So if that fits you, great, let's talk. And if you've got other reasons, like maybe you're trying to get your assets lined up for an orderly disposition at some point down the road, we can help with that. We can use some family entities and assorted insurance strategies that are great tax shelters under the current version of the Internal Revenue Code. So anyway, go complete those forms and get on our calendar, and we'd love to chat with you. Okay, well, let's go to the news. I've added, I don't know, seven or eight articles, I think, to the list since this past Sunday show, and that list is out on our BAPlannerShow.com site. It's a companion site we have that's just for the radio show, and the resources page is where we keep those. It's under the news tab, and if you'll take a look at that list, perhaps you can follow along, or you can come back to it later if you'll just remember this is where we put these articles each week, and we try to make it easy for those that care to follow along. It's amazing how much news we have, and I didn't even get to an article on probably one of the biggest things. It seems like it was such big news yesterday, and now everybody's moving on, looking at like one of the articles I have towards the top of this week's list is it's 2024, but tax writers are thinking 2025. And those first two articles are about the same topic, which is which provisions and how much of the 2017, the TCJA, Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, colloquially known as the Trump Tax Act. As many of you may know, or if you listen to this show, you know there's quite a few provisions in that tax act that revert back to the levels that they were at when that act passed at the end of 2017, effective 1/1/2026, assuming Congress doesn't act sooner. And so these two articles are talking about the first one by the Tax Foundation, or on the taxfoundation.org site, talks about which provisions are worthy of keeping around. And then 2024 is more of a point by point on what the provisions are that are more likely to achieve the partisan sniping that'll take place over the next 12 to 18 months or so, as they try to get some common agreement in Congress. But in any event, it's going to be interesting to see how much makes the final bill, if there is one. And I suspect there will be, because congressmen and women like to take credit, and they especially like to take credit. In fact, they only want to take credit for something that will affect their constituents in the near term. If it's after their term in office, they're not nearly as happy to work on that, unless there's some way they can get credit for it now. But in any event, we'll come back to those two articles later in the show. Let's drop down to the third one, which is about the concept we've been talking about, or a lot about lately, renting versus owning. And as we pointed out, the cost of renting has been less expensive than buying the equivalent amenity set or type of property. And it's still, in almost every major market in the U.S., as we sit here today, renting is still less expensive than owning. And I, let's see, I just dropped a connection to my article. But as the subtitle says there, here we go, let's come back. Both rent and housing costs escalated in 2023, but rents are rising faster. This article's notable for, in my mind, for a couple of reasons. I mean, one, it bodes well for those of us that are apartment owners, and you know, the rental market has been in general. Now, there's bright spots and there's less than bright spots, and you know, many markets or submarkets across the U.S. But you know, certainly since, I guess, 2020 or so, rents have generally gone up, and that was true in 2023 as well. However, there seems to have been a pause on the escalation, the rate of escalation, certainly, in the rental market, or at least for sure the multifamily market. I think it's probably a true statement in the single family market. I don't watch the single family market as closely, although we do have quite a number of clients that buy single family, but most of our clients have moved into the multifamily space. There's a number of reasons for that, and we'll perhaps have a show soon that compares the differences between single family rental models and that of multifamily. And I think the longer you own single family, you probably become more likely to make the move into multifamily at some point. It's just, there's a lot better throughput on your resources, among other things. I mean, there's the ability to truly be passive when you're dealing with a large apartment building that's got, you know, 150 or 200 fellow investors, and you've got one party that's designated as the lead partner or syndicator or sponsor. Those names are interchangeable. And they are alone are charged with locating that property, doing the due diligence, deciding whether or not it's something to pursue, and then they're responsible for raising the capital, getting the debt placed, getting staff to take care of leasing, maintenance, etc. And the passive or capital partners are simply that. They're providing the funds, and generally speaking, they don't have anything to do with managing the asset or managing the property. And in most cases, that's how we want it. And hopefully we're signing up with a lead partner that's got ethics and has credibility in the particular asset type that we're acquiring, be it a apartment building, be it what we call a value add apartment versus a yield play or a buy to hold property. And the value add is a scenario where we buy a beat up older property, has a lot of deferred maintenance typically, and the lead partner has a strategy to execute in terms of renovating, updating the property's amenities, which in turn allows us to update the rent and increase the rent such that the net operating income of the property goes up, which of course makes the property more valuable, either in the context of a refinance where we're able to get a chunk of our funds out, our original funds, or a possible sale. And that strategy has been executed many, many times in the recent and distant past. I've watched it for 20 plus years, again, with my client base, and I personally have invested in that type of project, and look forward to some other transactions coming down the road. And the markets are recovering, and again, there's going to be those that lose. There's no doubt that, you know, the market is going to have some victims if they use the wrong type of debt or didn't properly underwrite the property to allow for a significant increase in the mortgage interest rate, or the recent uptick in insurance cost or property taxes or new mortgage reserve requirements. I mean, the syndicators are getting hit from five or six different angles in terms of the difficulty in executing their business plans. Let's do this. We've gone a few minutes past our normal break time. Let's go ahead and take a short break, and we'll return momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Coming up to me and asking what's your secret. With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan@npross.com, Nathan@npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Like the song, Bobby McGee. I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I want to be. Big dreams and vague dreams. And there are many just like me.
With big dreams.
Big dreams, big dreams, big dreams and faded jeans.
Okay, welcome back to more of the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we were just talking about a few news articles, and I wanted to continue here and drop down to the, apartment demand remains strong in these markets. And, this particular data source is from RealPage Analytics, and I think I mentioned before on the air, it's amazing to me how some of these white paper type companies, data sources, can seemingly be looking at the same market and have different conclusions. And so it just goes to show you that when you're looking at a big pool of data, sometimes the anomalies don't jump out, or the ones that do jump out are different than what other people see. But in any event, let's see what they say here are markets where apartment demand remains strong. First up is Charleston, which I believe is it doesn't say here. I think Charleston is what, West Virginia? That's odd that they don't say. But in any event, they're number one in terms of doing better than the rest of the country, basically, the average of the country. And it's in large measure due to the rapid growth of its workforce, which increased almost 6% in the year ending November 2023. Salinas, California got second place, even though it didn't experience similar job gains. Construction in the pipelines that came in, and that attracted more tenants. And remember what I keep saying week in and week out is that you've got a certain class of tenant now that, and of course this doesn't affect necessarily all families, but if it's a couple, either young couple or empty nester, they figured out that they could rent for probably about half what it takes to buy the equivalent amenity set were they to buy a home, as opposed to renting one of the new Class A apartments. And it's an interesting trend, and it's not just there in the U.S. I'm seeing the same thing here in Southeast Asia, and especially for older folks, I don't think there's any question renting beats buying. And I guess I only say older folks because most older folks could afford to buy or could qualify to buy. They might not like paying 6.5% to 7% interest or mortgage rates, but they could. Whereas the younger couples, typically buying's just not a choice. They can't qualify. So anyway, so after Salinas, California, comes Sioux Falls and Huntsville, and they had high tenant retention. Inventory grew 10.2% and 15.6% respectively in those cities. So again, more supply allowed more occupancy is essentially what appears to have happened. Because remember, the title of the article is Apartment Demand Remains Strong in These Markets. And so lastly, the Provo Orem region in Utah, that's where you've got Brigham Young University and Utah Valley University, and both contributed to higher occupancies. Oh, I guess there was one more on the list. It's Boise, Idaho. Again, 4.2% job growth, as well as remote workers. So that's a trend that's continued in some areas. I know, I think in the San Antonio market where our properties are, the remote worker is not necessarily a disappearing breed, but it's certainly not as strong as other parts of the country. So anyway, let's see here. What do we want to go into next here? Rate cuts may not be high enough to drive commercial real estate demand or prices higher. And, you know, the problem is you've got more than one factor, you know, that's causing or impacting demand. And depending on which segment of commercial real estate you're referring to, and, of course, the office market is absolutely dismal. But, you know, commercial real estate prices have been a bit depressed because of the high interest rates, and you know, lower rates alone may not be enough to get the prices back up. The absorption rate has not been adequate to push, you know, the demand higher, and so you've got a lot of new product that's come into the market, and it's going to take you know, some time beyond just the interest rate cuts to move the needle. And this is just a very brief article, but I don't think there's any question the high points are exactly dead on. It's not, you know, when you got office buildings that are, you know, on average across the country, I believe in the neighborhood of 20% vacant, the interest rate's not going to necessarily fill those up. It's not quite like mortgages on homes. And of course, with homes, you've got a lack of supply in many markets, if not most markets. Whereas with office, you got plenty of empty office square footage. And so the interest rate is not going to do a whole lot to move the needle. Let's see what else. Here, got a couple articles on tax issues. Oh, we've got one article on this is a nice recap of all the 50 states. I need to move this up into the pinned area of my articles, but let's take a quick look at this. Taxes in retirement, how all 50 states tax retirees. And this, you know, there's been a lot of elderly leaving the high tax states for the low tax states over the past year and a half, maybe 2 years. And so if you're in that camp where you've been thinking about it, You know, here's a good summary that looks at several factors. You know, how's retirement income taxed versus earned income? That's one big factor. What type of income do you receive? And then which state do you live in and how does it treat that type of income? And, you know, there's, it's not just a question of a state not having a personal income tax. That, you know, some states have a personal income tax, but they exclude certain items of income like IRA distributions or pension distributions. And, you know, the example right in the first paragraph is Alabama. A new law effective last year makes the first $6,000 or distributions from retirement plans like IRAs and 401ks tax exempt for retirees age 65 and older. So, you know, you'll see provisions like that where, you know, they're either partially taxable or maybe not at all. Just, I've forgotten which states do that, and but here's your chance to go look at how from A to Z how each state taxes typically the income that the elderly have. And you know, we've got clients all over the country, and thank goodness we've got software that keeps up with the bulk of those changes. It's a lot easier to review a return of some of these states, California, for instance, or Arizona, and than it is to do it from scratch. God, I think back to the days of paper prepared returns where we literally or some folks literally used a pencil and paper. I fortunately managed to sidestep that era just barely. You know, when I started in the early 80s, we actually had the pioneers of the tax software business getting started as well. And so, you know, we had the good fortune of fully exploiting the personal computer advent. But in any event, nowadays it's hard to find professional level software that doesn't do the state returns. And again, we have quite a few clients in other states than Texas. Let's go back. Estimated tax payments. This is a topic that is near and dear to our hearts, because it seems like we explain these rules over and over and over. And I just had a client yesterday that I went through these rules with that has been with me for quite a few years. And the problem is you don't get confronted with these rules on a daily basis, so it's easy to forget. But one strategy we use, and that's really all I want to talk about, the other estimated tax rules, you know, you can Google estimated tax payments and see the four due dates, you know, the April 15th, June 15th, September 15th, and then January 15th are the four dates. But you can, if you're, especially if you're in retirement, years, you can skip those four estimated due dates and instead have some federal income tax withholding withheld from your pension distribution or IRA or 401 at the end of the tax year. You could literally do it on the 31st of December, assuming you've got a friendly payor or custodian of your retirement funds, or maybe a bank that you've got significant interest with. The point is, if you make your estimated tax payments vis-a-vis withholding, federal income tax withholding, again, like out of a IRA. Let's say you're going to take an IRA distribution, or let's say you have to because you have required minimum distributions. You're into that age strata where you have to take a percentage. And you could tell Fidelity or Schwab or whoever your custodian is, hey, I want you to withhold, you know, $25,000 out of that $30,000 distribution and make a federal income tax payment on my behalf. And that payment gets treated as if you had made it pro rata throughout the year over those four dates that we just mentioned. And so you sidestep any penalty if you were underpaid on those four dates, and at the same time you're continuing to use the money, which is the strategy. It's like, why would you give it to the IRS any sooner than you have to? So in any event, it's a good little trick to know. And obviously, as we get older, we have, most of us have required minimum distributions, or RMDs, as they're otherwise known. And if you have questions about that, feel free to email me or give us a call. We're going to go ahead and take our last break. We'll be back momentarily with the final segment of this week's Via Planner with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make it. Like a man.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be a Planner with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I just going to mention briefly, yesterday's news was Congress approving a funding extension. It's another CR, or continuing resolution. It's not a final budget just yet, which I think it's been 20 plus years since we had the final budget, or had a final budget. But in any event, it's going, if they actually get it done by, I believe it's now extended till March, there will be about a $1.7 trillion deficit, and that's just, you know, it's hard to fathom. And of course, there's a lot of high fives, and Senator Schumer's talking about how historic it is, and the Republicans are not doing a whole lot better in terms of, you know, reining in spending. Nor was there a budget package as part of that plan, so that's still got to be border security as part of that plan. And all they did was they avoided a shutdown and agreed to finish the rest of the appropriations, which I guess if you call doing the job they were voted into office to do, which is provide an annual fiscal budget for our country, well, yeah, I don't know. I don't know that that's a reason to high five, but it's sad is what I would say. And adding another $1.7 trillion to the deficit, that's just crazy. That's just crazy. But in any event, you know, the deficits are going to continue for as far as the eye can see. And I know we talk about it week in, week out, and, you know, what are we going to do, right? And how do we deal with, personally, how do we deal with the inevitable, which is tax rates are going to go up. They have to go up because of the math involved with how much of the budget is not already spoken for just by virtue of all the automatic indexing and unfunded mandates we have that each year become part of the outgoing expenditure. And, you know, the amount of money that we're already on the hook for, not counting the unfunded mandates, just the part that we actually admit to, is in excess of $34 trillion now. And it's just unbelievable. I was correct when I said earlier, the last time Congress completed I believe it's 12 appropriations bills that make up the annual budget, it was 1996. So what is that? 20 years. I guess it'd be 27 years. That's crazy. And they just keep passing continuing resolutions that basically say, well, we agree to fund this much. And I guess some people might even question the legitimacy of the laws that they use to do that. But it appears there's finally going to be a budget completed by March. Although you watch, you know, this time they only waited around till literally the day before the well would have run dry. And parts of government would have had to start shutting down. And how many times has this played out over the last 20-plus years? But in any event, you know, we talk, excuse me, every week about what's going to happen when those tax rates adjust or go up, and how much will they have to go up to accommodate the annual spending needs. I'm sorry, I've got a bug in my throat. Get a sip of coffee there. And I'm telling you, and I've told you this week in, week out, if you have money still in pre-tax retirement accounts, now's the time to start moving to Roth. You don't have to do it all in 1 year. You should take advantage of 24, 2024, and 2025 because, again, the tax brackets and assorted rules, unless something's done to keep some of the 2017 Tax Act provisions, are all going to reset 1/1/2026. And so you've got a couple years to get as much as you can. And then I would tell you beyond that, it's anybody's guess as to what may occur, because it's not like I think most people in Congress understand the math is not good, but they're not taking the action they need just yet, because it's like we just did with avoiding the shutdown today. They wait to the last minute. So, you know, if you're telling us that 2029 is when the floodgate breaks, well, they're going to wait till 2029 to try to address it. The problem is it's so much money involved. I don't know where you go at that point, because the tax brackets most likely need to go up by 200% is what most economists, and lest you think that's far-fetched, CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, back in 2009 produced a report for Congress as to what they needed to do to fix the deficit problem. And that was a long time ago, 14 years ago. We didn't have anywhere near the inflation we have right now. We also didn't have the debt load. I believe it was in the $9 or $10 trillion range. And further, we had not borrowed more than about, I think it was 50 or 60% of the, you know, debt to GDP ratio. Well, now, and by the way, it wasn't projected to go past the 100% mark until 2040 or 2042. Well, we're at 135% of debt to GDP now. We're well past the 100% mark, and boy, did we do it in record time, right? So in any event, it's not Republican, it's not Democrat. It's math. And if you want to learn more about that and see specifics, you can go to our resources page on our BAPlannerShow.com website and look at the videos. I still haven't caught up on, I've got a lot of videos I've pulled off that I'm going to be putting up soon. But one that I do have out there is Representative David Swikert from Arizona. That breaks down the significant problem that we're up against. And he's got a lot of nice charts. He's got a lot of factual data. And if you want to see just how fast we're moving towards going off the cliff, that would be a good 30 minutes you should devote to listen to that video. View that video, I guess. And there are others, but, you know, that's probably the simplest, concise explanation I've seen in a while. And we've got some others we're working on putting together to put up there. David McKnight, the gentleman that wrote The Power of Zero and Tax-Free Income for Life, which are two books we follow in our planning strategies, and he's got some good explanations on the debt and the 2029 to 2030 projection on when everything unravels. And when you can't pay 100% of the interest on your debt, you're not going to be selling treasury bills. You may not be able to sell nearly as many, but you for sure won't be able to sell them at the current interest rates. That won't happen. So it's bad news, however it happens. And as David Swiker points out in his video, you know, the Democrats would like to raise taxes on the rich, whoever that is. They can't seem to define it, if you ask. And the Republicans would say, well, we got to cut spending. We can't keep giving away all the foreign aid that we do. And as Swikert points out, you could do both those things. You could tax everybody that's, quote, wealthy. You could take all their money, tax them 100%, and then you could take away every dollar of foreign aid we provide other countries, and you're not even moving the needle in terms of the annual deficit. It's not even close. And when you've got the components of the annual budget, you've got Medicare and Medicaid at $1.7 trillion currently. That's the largest component. Social Security is $1.4 trillion. The interest on the debt will be $1 trillion for the first year, this fiscal year. And then defense is $851 billion, to date. And, you know, this is right off of the usdebtclock.org. It's a wonderful site for keeping up with a large number of financial variables related to the U.S. deficit. And when you follow these numbers, just remember we're borrowing approximately $78,000 per second, I believe, is the delineator. And it's a lot of money. It's each one of us taxpayers, if you took the total U.S. national debt, the $34 trillion that we admit to, that's $264,000 per taxpayer now is what that's up to. And it's insanity. And here we go, getting ready to add another $1.7 trillion or $1.66, whatever the number is, and it'll change. You know, that doesn't include the money that we'll end up spending when China invades Taiwan. You watch, it's coming. And, you know, it's not that we don't spend money on good causes. We do. It's just we don't have it. And, you know, we're borrowing every dollar we send to Ukraine or to Israel, we're borrowing that dollar, you know, and that's the problem. Okay, well, we're at the end of this week's show. I appreciate you tuning in. Again, for those that would like to potentially access our services, go to the baplanner.com website, fill out our at least the first form, step one on the forms link, and schedule a call. We'll be happy to see if we can sync up with your needs and objectives. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Yeah.